as an entrepreneur, you're always as good as like your next idea. And then, you know, we're running a pretty large organization now, and it takes a lot of energy and discipline just to keep this thing going. And then, of course, we want this to keep going forever, for a very, very long time. That's why we also took the public company public, so On can live independently for a long time. And so as soon as we start resting on our past successes, that's the first day of decline. So it's more like, hey, wow, you know, very appreciative. But then also you see the people that wear Ons, I see the people that don't wear Ons, you know, and there are a lot more out there.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed.
Casper Copetti grew up in a small mountain village in Switzerland. He is well known for co-founding one of the fastest-growing running shoe brands with a global presence in the world. Today, that company On is listed on the New York Stock Exchange after going public in 2021. Personally, I've noticed the growth of these sneakers firsthand, and I even bought a pair myself. They feel great. But On, like 99.9% of the founders and companies I interview, don't just take off right out of the gate. There are tons of challenges and getting thrown down along the way. What was most inspiring to me was when Casper recited the story of when he was trying to get his brand over here to the US. Flying from Switzerland to New York with a backpack, holding a few samples, he had one store and chain who agreed to see him. And when he arrived, the buyer at this medium-sized chain refused to even acknowledge him. Today, let's just say that specific account is selling a lot of On sneakers. Because Casper never quit. He never gave up. He kept pursuing his dream of a running shoe built with OnCloud's cloud tech technology, which seeks to give On shoe wearers the perfect running sensation. I love stories like that. And I love gritty entrepreneurs. But I had to start this interview by asking Casper about growing up in a tiny mountain village far from cities, and how it impacted him in his life and business.
Thanks for having me, Robert. Hey, yeah. Look, I grew up in a town with less than 3,000 people. I'm in the heart of the Swiss Alps. And I grew up, most of my childhood friends were farmers, and I helped them with the cows. And, you know, I was there when baby sheep were born. And it taught me a lot, taught me responsibility, taught me leadership. Have you ever herded 20 cows, basically moving them from one pasture to the other? I was maybe in fourth grade, and I remember I was leading them across a road, and there was this lady in a silver Mercedes, and she honked the horn, and one of the cows got scared and she jumped on the hood. And here I was at, I don't know how old, I was maybe 10 years old. Yeah, so those were the kind of experiences. But I mean, you know, Switzerland is a great place to grow up. And, you know, even in a smaller town like that, we have good schools, we have great public schooling, and my mom was a librarian. She actually ran the school library, so I had that influence. So I was either outside doing sports, and that's where, you know, the link to what I do today comes in, or I was reading books. We didn't have a TV, but there was no cinema around, and so that was pretty much my childhood and youth. And from that, definitely my passion for movement, from being outside for sports, was born.
What was that like? Like, your mom was a librarian, and you know, you were always outside. Did she have an influence on you in terms of furthering your education, and potentially even today? Is there still an influence you feel from her creating this incredible business?
Absolutely, and you know, she'd be proud when she listens to this. People in my family, I mean, I had a higher education. So my grandma, for example, was one of the first women in Switzerland to get a PhD.
Wow.
She had a law background. So yeah, the academics was in my family. My dad also was an engineer and a PhD. So that was almost like a given. And in my family, like education and wisdom always counted more than having money or, you know, or those kind of things. And so that was definitely an influence. But then I also have to say, my dad was an entrepreneur in our whole household. There was always this notion, everything is possible, but you have to try hard. Yeah, that was like, you know, I never heard no. It was like, hey, it sounds a little bit out there, but if you really believe in it, go try it. You know, and that was great encouragement. And so, you know, when we founded what is now On, you know, a lot of people were very skeptical. And, you know, this is regarded as a huge risk. And, you know, I'll concur, it was a huge risk. And, you know, the Swiss are not necessarily risk takers. But I never heard my parents or anybody in the family say, well, this is a stupid idea. You should, you know, go and get a job as an accountant or go work for a Swiss bank. Everybody had a lot of encouragement.
Now, watching your father and as an entrepreneur, what did he do and what did you learn from him?
My dad and his brothers were second generation entrepreneurs. That's not an easy spot to be in. But what I learned is just the responsibility that comes with it, but also the freedoms. And I'm an explorer at heart. You know, for me, like degrees of freedom and opportunities to make new experiences. That's what always driven me. And I always wanted to. You know, I had an older sister. Maybe that's part of it. But I always wanted to be the first to do something. And, you know, my sister would get, learn how to ride a horse when she was maybe six and I was three, you know, and, you know, I would fall off the horse. But, I was one of the first snowboarders in Switzerland. This was in 1988.
Oh, wow.
You know, I was always... So, you know, that's a constant. And even today at On, as the co-founder and now executive co-chairman, I always take on the future projects, like what's way out there and like, let's dream something up and then make it happen.
Yeah, that shows. I mean, it's incredible from your upbringing and how that even impacts you today within this massive New York Stock Exchange business. I think you were the first person from your small town to actually go to college or graduate from college. Is that
from the class of about 22 kids in my grade? You know, that was the only one to go on. And from that small town to, I remember the first time I drove into Manhattan with a sample in my backpack to see a first potential customer, Jackrabbit, the running store in New York City. I was literally almost told the cab driver to turn around and take me back to JFK. I was so scared. You have no idea. These, you know, when you come across the bridge, the buildings are taller than the mountains where I grew up.
Wow.
And you know, I was like, wow, who's waiting for a Swiss, for a Swiss boy with a crazy product idea? But everything turned out all right.
Absolutely. Funny thing is Jackrabbit is literally right on my corner. At least the one that on the Upper West Side here. So now every time I walk by there, I'm going to think of that. Tell me what it was like starting this business, like you just said. Talk about where the idea came from and then how you had to throw a knapsack on and go to New York to try and sell it. What was that like and how did it come together?
Yeah, so every idea has lots of fathers and mothers, right? And you know, to maybe tell the short version of the story. So there was a Swiss engineer, a good friend of ours today, that kind of reinvented the cushioning system. And he was looking to make a product that allows you to slide into your step as you're running, similar to a tennis player being able to slide when they play on a clay court, and thus taking away a lot of the causes for injury. And so he built a form factor that he patented. And at the time he reached out to Olivier, my co-founder. Olivier was one of the best triathletes in the world and very well known in Switzerland. And he basically commissioned him as a test runner. And Olivier had always had a very curious mind and was a very, you know, gear freak. And so he thought, well, this is really weird looking. It was actually, you know, it looked like, you know, someone had cut up garden hoses and glued them on the bottom of a shoe. That's actually how the first prototype was literally made. But he tried them on and he was like, wow, this is something I had never experienced before when running. And so they banded together. And he then contacted me and said, "Hey, Casper, I co-invented a running shoe. Can you help me bring it to market?" And that's when I was like, "Olivier, that's a really stupid idea. You're never going to stand a chance against, you know, this will never work." You know, like, and to all of the people out there that told me it would never work, hey, I was one of them. I told Olivier right there, this wouldn't work. But he insisted, and he gave me a pair to try. And I will never forget the first time I put them on. Just walked around the conference room, and it was like, wow, you can see the technology, you can feel it. Back then, you know, the shoes squeaked like hell. So you could even hear the technology. But yeah, I was a marketeer, and I was like, wow, this is unique. You know, usually we try to, at the time I was working for Young & Rubicam, a branding and advertising agency, and we were trying to sell mobile phone subscriptions. And, you know, like the only point of difference, it would be like you send 100 text messages, you get a free movie theater ticket, you know. And here we had a technology. So that gave us the courage to do it. And a lot of people, including myself, that were injured runners or not great runners, had a lot of success and more fun running. And that's what gave us the courage. And that was also what kept us going, because in the beginning, pretty much everything that can go wrong when you make a physical product did go wrong. But those early fans encouraged us to continue and don't give up.
How hard was that for you at the time, or was it hard to leave, you know, this corporate job, as you talk about Young & Rubicam, major advertising agency, and join as a co-founder and start this business that initially you're even thinking, I don't know how this is going to work?
Yeah, it was very, very scary. And today I look back at my, you know, like younger self, and I'm just laughing at me, you know, like I was so timid. I wasn't an entrepreneur. Maybe I thought I was, but I wasn't. And yeah, you know, we were all in a little bit in a golden cage. You know, I made like $300,000 a year. Had just bought a house, had a mortgage. And we went from that to not knowing how we would pay the bills the next day. But it's also very liberating. So if anyone is listening that is thinking about starting a business, it's very risky, it's very hard, but it's also very rewarding.
Yeah, we have a lot of listeners. Obviously, this being For Entrepreneur, the magazine and the network of lots of folks out there who want to take that dive off the diving board or want to do, and it's sometimes it's so difficult because, like you said, you just put a, you know, you have a mortgage on a house, and to go from the unknown to the known, that's really hard to do for a lot of people.
Yeah. Take the plunge, jump.
I agree. It's like life's too short. And, you know, I know there's certain people are in certain situations, but if you have a passion, which it sounded like you did or do still, and an idea, you know, I'm always go for it. I want to ask you that first year, as you said, looking at the product and knowing you were going to go out and market and sell this, what were some of those challenges you had and how'd you overcome some of those?
So, you know, we have the full monty of problems. We have a physical product that we engineer, design, produce, ship, invoice, and, you know, and to make things worse, you know, Switzerland is a very small country. So we started in 6 different countries on day one with everything, like taxes, laws, customs, VAT. It was very, very complex. The thing that people probably think it would be the hardest to actually find a manufacturer and make these shoes, that wasn't so hard, because our industry, everybody has outsourced production. So you basically just have to find a good factory and convince them that you're legit and you're going to be around. And usually that also takes like a down payment up front to basically say, okay, please make us 10,000 pairs or 30,000 pairs or something like that. So that, you know, that was part of it. But then also just also learning how the industry works. And this is, I think, where we had a huge advantage. We were all outsiders. We had never been part of the sports industry. We had never manufactured nor sold anything in our lives. I mean, I was a consultant. So we came in and we asked the right questions, or questions maybe that an industry insider would not have asked. And sometimes, or many times actually, the answers that we got were not convincing. Most of the time, it was like, yeah, that's just how it is. And we're like, well, I'll give you an example. So it takes about 4 months to reproduce an existing running shoe. So you already made 100,000 or so, and then you place a new order. It takes 4 months. Why? And we really asked these questions, and it turns out that the part that's the least exciting in a running shoe, the fabric for the upper, take the longest. So for example, we said, well, we already know that we're over the next 6 months, we're going to sell 200,000 of black shoes. I'm just making something up. Can't you start buying the material now? And we use it whenever, whether we use it in June or July, it won't matter that much. Then I guess, sure. And we literally shortened our lead time from 4 months to 4 weeks. And just like that, the working capital that you save, how you can react to trends and you can get behind something, those are huge, huge things. And so I think to have that mindset of questioning and trying to do things different, not just in the product itself, but in the whole, in every process in going to market and speak to the consumer, that is something that has defined on from day one, and it's still helping.
Is there ever a time early on in that first year or two where you questioned yourself or thought you may have made a wrong decision?
We had a lot of encouragement from runners, from users. So we never had the moment where we sit in an office and the phone doesn't ring. We're always like trying to catch up with demand. So that was good. But there were hard times. And some of the strongest rejections came from actually the running shops, the Jackrabbits of this world. Yeah. And I remember that trip that I quickly alluded to. The buyer at the time, she received me and actually had to go down the stairs to the basement, and she refused to put the shoes on to try them. Imagine I had just flown, traveled for something like 12 hours, spent a lot of money to get there, and she did not want to try the shoes. And I was like, well, is that going to be our experience? And we had people that then actually did try the shoes, and they were like, well, this is the worst running shoes I've ever tried. Or I've had people that opened the discussion when I showed up, and this is maybe my third trip to that particular store, coming in and saying, I only have 5 minutes and I hate your product. So those are the kind of rejections. And over time you realize this is all a game. This is psychology. And how do you get from, you probably need to hear no three times before it's a yes or a maybe. So you just want to get through these three yeses as quickly as possible. Maybe get them out of the way in the first meeting. So, not having a fear of rejection, those were important things. But overall, there were a lot more positive things. We had one very dicey situation, and that's when our supplier went bankrupt just before Chinese New Year, just before everything was supposed to go on a boat. And God knows how the product came out of the factory, but somehow we got it out and we survived.
When you had found that out, you and your partners, and hurt, what was going through your mind?
Well, this is something that we had on a constant basis. I would say in the first year, the world seemed to come to an end about once a week, like a life-threatening situation. And you go into panic mode. And the good thing is, we were three founding partners, and nothing creates more unity and more drive than a good crisis. It just aligns everybody, and we have to resolve this. So we constantly went into this crisis mode, and then over time, those life threatening moments, they started to occur only once a month, and then once every 6 months, and then once a year, and you become very resilient. And as leaders, today, not many things can faze us. And sometimes our people are like, this is really bad. And we're like, well, yeah, it's not going to kill us, right? So let's not even look at who's to blame. So how do we resolve this?
I love that, because it's so true. And I'm so guilty of this, being an entrepreneur running businesses where I panic the moment it happens. But then with the resiliency, and like you said, you go into that mode of figuring out and solving, really helps the business in the long run, and it helps you get better. And I'm sure there's so many people when they have those moments are like, forget it, I'm done. And it's hard, but you go through them. And like you said, now at the point you're at where, others who might be younger to the business or younger to being in business are freaking out, and you guys are like, don't worry, we've been through, a bankruptcy on the day we're going to launch. And, I want to ask you, I live in New York City, as I said, Jackrabbit, right? Literally right on my block, which I love now to know this. I see your sneakers all over New York City. I mean, if I tell you whether it's at the gym or in Central Park, I would estimate like 30%. I'm shocked. It's like everyone has them.
Hope you're shocked in a good way.
I told you my wife has several pairs. I only have one. But how does that, in terms of those humble beginnings in the Swiss Alps, like how did the company have this rapid growth?
Yeah, well, we don't know. I would be lying to say this was all like one big master plan and we just executed it. But I mean, that first moment when I put on the shoes and I felt something that was very different, that magical moment that happened millions of times over. And I can actually, and I've been there in many, many moments where people try it on for the first time and you can see it in their eyes. It's like this aha moment. I get it. And then what happens from that moment, obviously, you know, once you try, you buy, that's one thing. But then you're very likely to tell, you know, 5 to 10 people around you, hey, you gotta try these. So the whole growth has been very organic. And then it has been, you know, this is maybe, not the greatest analogy, but it's been very viral. You know, these shoes are contagious and they're addictive. It's hard to go back. And at the same time, we live in a time when consumers are a little bit fed up with like the very big brands and their marketing power and their power in general. And they like to work with, you know, discover like the craft beer brands, you know, and on, even though we're over a billion in sales now, you know, we're still for many people, you know, there are a lot more people in the US, for example, are today discovering on that already know about it. And so you can be in the know. And I probably sold about 10 iPhones here in Switzerland when they first came out. That was it was a great product. And I was proud to be one of the first ones to have one. And I told many people that's what's happening with On. So it's been very, very organic. And, you know, we're at this intersection of performance and style, and performance in a kind of everyday setting translates into comfort, and comfort and convenience drive a lot of consumer choices. So I think it's all there. Then, of course, the pandemic helped. I mean, I remember when, you know, we obviously couldn't travel for a while in 2020, and then we came back to New York for the IPO about a year later. And we were blown away. I mean, what you're describing, I remember I was in New York before, and I would literally say hi to everybody that wore a pair of Vans, you know, and like introduce myself, one of the founders, you know. If I did this today, I mean, it no longer happens, right? I mean, yeah. I sometimes still do it. Like the other day, we were in Chicago and next to us on a red light, a FedEx truck pulled up. And you know how they have no doors? So there was this really cool looking dude in there, and he wore one of our most recently launched products, the Cloud Vista. And I turned on the window and I'm like, hey, where do you get these shoes? And, yeah, they're really cool. I got them there. And I'm like, well, you know, I made those. And he's like, what? And he pulls out his phone. You know, the lights turn green and, you know, and off we went. But those are still the magic moments.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors. This episode of How Success Happens is being presented by State Farm. Being a small business owner can be so fulfilling, rewarding, and let's be honest, a little scary from time to time. Doing your own thing and being your own boss is great, but sometimes it can make you feel like you're all alone, especially when things aren't going great. Well, the folks at State Farm want you to know you're not alone. State Farm has thousands of agents who are small business owners too, so they know what it takes to protect everything you've worked so hard for. State Farm has an assortment of insurance policies for small businesses that can be tailored to your needs. So whether you're a hairstylist, an electrician, or a florist, State Farm agents are ready to help. Learn more and find an agent today at statefarm.com/small business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And our next sponsor.
As business leaders, our time is pulled in a lot of different directions. Maybe it's managing emails, or organizing your calendar, or even following up on projects. Saying no to those tasks could help you actually reclaim an average of 15 hours every week to say yes to the things you love. It's time to focus on your strengths and delegate your weaknesses. Belay has been helping busy leaders with their staffing solutions for over a decade. Belay intentionally pairs clients with virtual assistants, accounting, and more. Great leaders don't do anything alone. Find the support you need to delegate the details with Belay. Get the right help now with a virtual assistant from Belay. Text HSH to 55123 to get $300 off your startup fee for a virtual assistant when you schedule a call before August 31st. That's HSH to 55123 to save $300 and reclaim 15 hours every week. And we're back. How does that make you feel when you think back to that first trip with that knapsack to New York and a buyer who won't even try on the shoes? Like, personally, what's that feeling inside?
Gratitude. I mean, it's just, you know, people maybe think like you're exhilarated, or like, you know, you think you made it or whatever, but it's more like, as an entrepreneur, you're always as good as like your next idea. And then, you know, we're running a pretty large organization now, and it takes a lot of energy and discipline just to keep this thing going. And then, of course, we want this to keep going forever, for a very, very long time. That's why we also took the company public, so On can live independently for a long time. And so, as soon as we start resting on our past successes, that's the first day of decline. So it's more like, hey, wow, you know, very appreciative. But then also, you know, you see the people that wear Ons. I see the people that don't wear Ons, you know, and there are a lot more out there. So, you know, we're in an industry where you have someone like the Swoosh, where they are something, what, $44 billion in revenue, and they're still growing. So, you know, we have many, many good years of very strong growth ahead to potentially catch up with them. So we're more focused on that.
Yeah, you guys are growing, and obviously from an original pair of sneakers, you've had new products. Can you tell us about just some of the newer products that you're really hyped on or that have done well, and just going from that original pair?
Yeah. So, I mean, the brand was founded to help injured runners to run again and run better and maybe have more fun doing so. And that's still the roots and the core of the business. Now, of course, running shoes have come a long way since we started. At the time, we were the only ones that made very flexible, well cushioned shoes. Now everybody does that. So we had to stay ahead of the curve. We just launched a shoe that's called the Cloud Monster that has a very, very thick outsole, but it has the cloud technology, so the holes, you know, for those that maybe are not so familiar with the technology. And so you have an amazingly cushioned ride, but you can still feel the ground that you run on. So it's a very supercharged feeling, and it's not just like we're putting a thicker mattress onto your foot. So, and then, as some listeners may be aware, in the past, like, the type of running shoe you wore didn't necessarily impact your performance. And then for the last couple of years, you know, new shapes, new foams, and new carbon plates came into play, and actually, today, footwear can make you faster, and it's significant. It's 4-5%. And so what we've learned in this process, and we now make some of the fastest shoes in the market. We just won a couple medals in the Worlds and the Commonwealth Games and the European Championships this year. What we've learned there, we bring to everyday runners, and, you know, new geometries, and, you know, if you feel like, hey, you know, running is very hard, and you try a pair of Ons like the Cloud Monster, especially, you feel like, wow, I'm going faster. I feel less pain. My legs are fresher afterwards. And that's a great moment. So that's one thing. The other thing is we've taken that running light, agile sensation into the outdoors. Obviously, we are from Switzerland. I grew up and I still live in the mountains. So we spend a lot of time on the trails. And how can you liberate people that are on the trail? A lot of these, you know, these mountaineering and outdoor brands, they come from very heavy boot type equipment. And we're all about connecting people with the trails, liberating them. So that's obviously a huge trend. And a lot of people also in the US are joining the great outdoors. And then the last thing is, you know, people started, I would say in about 2014, 2015, started to wear our running shoes for lifestyle purposes in the street, like they do with all the brands. But I have to tell you, Robert, it sucked. It bothered us because we made these amazing technical performance products and people wore them with jeans. So at some point we started to embrace this and said, well, you know, let's, you know, if that's what people want to do, let's give them a very versatile product that you can run in, you can use in the gym, but are going to look amazing I feel amazing through, you know, New York is for me the ultimate city, you know, where every New Yorker is an ask because you're doing lots of miles, you're going up and down the stairs, you're going to the subway, you sweat, rains, it's cold, and then the day never stops. You know, you go to the office, you go to a restaurant, you go to a club afterwards, and we make products that allow you to go through the day. And there, probably most prominently, we reinvented the tennis sneaker with our business partner, Roger Federer, we felt that if not with him, with whom, like who else has the right to reinvent like that classic elegant leather sneaker and the most elegant tennis player ever alive.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you know, it's interesting because when you were talking, you know, I still feel like internally for you, this is a mission for runners. And you still go back to that time and seeing just everyday people wearing those sneakers is certainly a good thing. But at the end of the day, you were in this business because of a passion. And it seems like you still really, as much as you enjoy people buying your sneakers and making a new product, it still seems to me like that passion is alive. You're here for athletes.
Absolutely. And hey, look, every On product you can run in. You know? So if somebody buys an On pair, even you know, as a sneaker, hey, you have a really high tech running shoe in your closet. Actually, one of the best known models from On is called the Cloud. It's the one with the bungee laces. I think you're using as well, right? If you go through TSA at the airport, you'll see millions of them. That's actually the very same shoe that Nicolas Biriga, you know, one of the best triathletes ever, wore when she took the silver medal in the Rio Olympics. So we made that shoe for her to compete in, and it became a lifestyle staple, one of the biggest silhouettes in the market. I mean, up there with, you know, a Vans Old School and a Nike Air Max in terms of how many pairs we sell globally. So, you know, but that's totally rooted in sports. And this is not that long ago. 6 years ago, it was the lightest running shoe on the market. And it's probably still one of the, you know, top two or three lightest products. So that's one. The other thing is, I mean, you know, we're very driven, and you know, we wouldn't be here if we weren't extremely competitive. So most of us were athletes themselves. We actually go out on run courses. So in New York, we go out and we go on the Hudson, we go into Central Park, and I personally sit down and count runners and see what they're wearing. And I determine On's market share and which of our new models show up. And you know, in New York, we're probably just below 10% of runners. And we want to be the number one on runners' feet. That's the mantra that I probably use about four or five times every day. Everybody here at On knows it. And that's what we're gunning for. And you know, we can probably triple our market share on runners' feet until we're the number one.
Yeah, no pun intended. You guys definitely have a lot of a runway. I know that you recently released some pretty impressive Q2 earnings results. You mind sharing some of the highlights of those results and just what you guys have accomplished?
Well, no, thank you. Yeah, hey, look, we're blown away by the response that we get in many markets, and you know, we grew 67% in the first half year over last year, and you know, when you look at overall, I think since we started, we had almost something like 85-90% CAGR, but actually the 67% means that's higher than we had some years like 2016, 2017 in terms of growth. So the business is actually accelerating. I mean, it's driven by consumer demand. On is not chasing the sales, you know, they happen pretty organically. So most of that comes out of existing stores that sell more. Obviously, our own D2C, we have a store in New York, but we could, when we look at the sales side, we probably say 9 times no out of 10 asks if you want to be in X or Y store. So we're really trying to keep distribution very limited, but it's just happening. It's happening because, you know, what you said, people see the brand pop up in the street, they approach like, hey, what are these? I see them everywhere, and you'll be like, well, these are extremely comfortable, we should try them. And that's how the wheel keeps spinning. And so in the US, which is currently our largest market, we're still growing at 100%. We grow at 100% in Australia. We tripled in Japan. We tripled in China. And nowhere are we even near a market saturation. And that's, again, that comes back to us coming from Switzerland and not having this huge home market. But we basically, you know, planted all these small trees 12 years ago, and now they're turning into forests. And it's a good position to be in because we can be very, very selective what we want to do with the brand, and we can chase the higher end of the market.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible, just the growth and like you said, not even close to saturation point, especially as the whole category grows. And, you know, I just think that with what you have accomplished and built, and it seems like you come in every day, you're still really building this business out. Do you have plans, further plans to, you know, I know you have one store here in New York, and is opening new stores part of the game plan?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, New York was a trial, and I was very skeptical of opening stores because the commitments you make towards a lease and the build out and all that, and many great brands have run into trouble because of, you know, they had too many stores in the wrong location. So we did the New York store, and we were very cautious, and it turns out it works extremely well. It's not just a very big commercial engine, but it's also a great way to connect with people. So twice a week we have a run out of the store that draws anywhere between 50 to 100 people every single time. And, you know, the store is way too small. Like, we were probably a little bit too cautious. That's the Swiss side in us. We're like, well, you know, 1,600 square feet. That sounds like a big store. And unfortunately, you know, and apologies, you know, if anyone of you have stood in the line there, like literally on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, there's probably like a 4,500 wait just to get into the store. So we're rolling the store out, actually a little bit bigger, to Venice Beach, to Miami this year, to London. We opened early this year. We opened one in Tokyo. I mean, Omote Santo. I always dreamed of having a store there. I don't know if you've ever been, but that's like the nicest shopping area in the world. There's nothing that even comes close in the United States. And we have, I would say, about 7 or 8 stores in China also.
Wow. And, you know, one of the other things that I've known is the sustainability, the importance of sustainability. I mean, you make great, beautiful product, good look, but you've also had that as part of your DNA.
Yeah, look, when you grow up like I did in the Swiss Alps, you're very close to nature, and the Swiss are known to be the recycling world champions. Like, we recycle everything, and it's kind of like, you know, we don't have the space to move on to the next place, so we had to take good care of our environment early on. And but really, when we founded on, as I said earlier, you know, we basically used the same factories and materials as everybody else, and at some point we were like, hey, that's not enough. And when you look out of my bedroom window at home, and I see how the glaciers are receding, and I see how the tree line that's driven by temperature has gone up maybe 300 feet or even 400 feet over the past 10 years. And it's very clear that something's happening that's not good. So a couple of years ago, we said, well, okay, we want to be a thought and action leader for sustainability and change the way things are done. And On is an innovation company at heart. And so rather than using that innovation power just to make people run faster or make an even lighter product, let's say, hey, can we also make the most sustainable product? And literally, we've done it the hard way. You know, we have our internal sustainability number crunching team that we take apart every single product and look at every piece and how can we make this better. To give you an idea on greenhouse gases, so climate, we have a goal of reducing our output by 55% per unit produced until 2030. So basically half the greenhouse gases per unit that we make. And we just now released our latest numbers. And in 2021, we actually, you know, were able to reduce it by 17%.
Wow.
So far. So, you know, we're on a good trajectory. The bad news is it's getting harder and harder. The quick wins we've already done. And this can mean like just redesigning a piece that creates less waste or leaving away some of the adornments on a product. And now we just started, introducing a very, very exciting technology. We were able to make the first running shoe made completely out of captured carbon emissions. So we went to, this has been a 5-year process, but the idea was, okay, can we pull carbon CO2 out of the air and turn that into foams and upper materials. And everybody told us it's not possible. So I said, well, at the time, the first biofuels came about, especially for aviation, where like some airlines started to use very, very small quantities where they actually used carbon emissions to make new jet fuels. And I said, well, if you can make jet fuel, you can make plastics. It's a very similar chemical process. And we started working with research labs here at the leading universities and found partners, went down many dead ends, but now succeeded. And literally, we're sourcing this now. Imagine there's a steel factory in Belgium and you have black smoke coming out of their smokestack. And we're taking that and we're turning it into the most pristine running shoe that you've ever seen.
That's amazing.
So we're super proud of it. The downside is, or the problem is, each of these pairs costs about $2.5 million to make. So, you know, you have a, you know, 6x markup, you know, you're talking 15 million retail price. There will be a couple of people in New York that could afford it.
There's probably a crazy enough of few, but
maybe check rabbit on the upper side, right? No, but joking aside, now the challenge is, and you know, we need to scale this to millions of pairs, and then costs will come down. And here we're inspired by someone, you know, like Elon at Tesla, that has done that. You know, he's taken a technology that existed, but everybody said, well, this is not going to be economic, that the range is not going to be good, the battery is not there, blah, blah, blah. It's not sexy. And he changed the industry. And now all of a sudden, electric cars are affordable. And if you're not making electric cars, you're probably out of business. And we feel On can be that agent of change for our industry. And what's super exciting about this material, we call it Clean Cloud, is a high-performance EVA foam. And EVA is one of the plastics that is the most used. So every mattress uses EVA. Every car, airplane, a lot of packaging is made from EVA. Imagine if it can go from one smokestack to all the smokestacks in the world, you know, capture the carbon emissions and turn it into EVA. And we might be able to match the cost curve eventually of conventional plastics that are made from petrol that you take out of the ground. That's what we're working towards.
That's amazing. For you personally, and looking forward, what is it that most excites you about the future of this business? And just even personally, for you in life, what is it that is still driving you?
Hey, look, we have over 70 nationalities at On. The average age is about 32-ish. And we're lucky that we're able to provide an environment where people can be creative. So just coming to work and working with all these amazing people is super inspiring. And I, you know, I've gone from being the chief cheerleader and, you know, rallying the sales troops or, you know, the development team or a factory to now being, you know, being part of the journey and being part of the team. And I really enjoy that. And that's one thing. The other thing is through the size that we now have, through the financial means, also after the IPO, we now have so many new avenues for innovation. And I said earlier, you know, for me, I'm the guy that is motivated by the new and that next thing. And, you know, so I have right now is a moment where I feel like I'm in a startup again. You know, I feel like I felt 12 years ago because, you know, what we're able to do on sustainability, what we're able to do in some ways, and how we interact with customers, and it never gets old. And whenever, you know, you feel like, well, you achieved something, there's always the next door that opens that you didn't even know existed, and options come up that you didn't know were around, and you can go after them. And that's what keeps it exciting.
Casper, before we let you go, I wanted to ask if you had advice or just general suggestions. As we alluded to, there's a lot of our listeners are already entrepreneurs, maybe starting businesses, but there's a lot also who are sitting in those jobs at, you know, the Young and Rubicans of the world and the big companies and really have this idea. Any suggestions or advice for some of those would-be entrepreneurs?
Yeah. Look, if you don't go, you will never know. Like if you don't try, take that plunge, you will never know whether you could have succeeded, right? This is a great job market right now, anywhere in the world. And you know, if you have a brain and you're motivated and engaged, you will find a job. And you know, we had this mantra that we always said, look, if we fail it on, we'll just go back to work.
I love that. That's how I looked at it when I started my first business at a really young age. The worst that could happen, I'd have to go back to corporate America. But there's nothing like being an entrepreneur, and it's incredible what you have built. And what I love is just how you really still seem to have that passion for what you're doing and creating for runners and all athletes and individuals. And, you know, that's really admirable, especially on the sustainable side as well and what you're doing there. So I definitely will continue to showcase my ons, and hopefully I don't turn off some people when they see me with them on them.
Just, you know, I can see what, you know, if you wear them and you're smiling, that means you're having a good time. That's what we're all about. You know, we recently kind of drafted our mission statement, and it's about igniting the human spirit through movement, because as you move, you're more positive, you have better ideas, you know, it's contagious, you pass it on and all these things. And this is why we say dream on.
I love that. Casper, thanks so much for coming on How Success Happens. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for having me, Robert.
You got it.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.